We're continuing with our series this week on conversations with Jesus. And as we do, I was reminded of a conversation I read a long time ago that supposedly took place between Sherlock Holmes and his good sidekick, Dr. Watson. I don't know if you're familiar with Holmes and Watson, but they were the great detective novels of another era, and they're still wonderful to read and see all the intricacies in solving crimes. And in this particular story, though, it was a story about Watson and Holmes making a decision to go camping. And they decided to go camping, and they went out to a nice spot. They pitched their tent and enjoyed a nice meal, and at bedtime decided to go to sleep. In the middle of the night or early in the morning sometime, Holmes awoke, and he woke Watson up. He shook him and woke him up, and he said, "Oh," he says, "Dr. Watson, look at the sky and look at the stars, and what does that tell you?" So Dr. Watson paused for a moment and he said, "Well, astronomically speaking, it tells me that in this wide universe that we're in, there are millions and billions of stars, there are other planets, there's just so much out there. Astrologically speaking," he says, "it seems to me that Saturn is in Leo." And he looks again and he says, "Horologically speaking, I think it's about 3:15 in the morning. Theologically speaking, it tells me that God is big and all-powerful and we're small. Meteorologically speaking, it tells me it looks like we're going to have a beautiful day. Is there anything else?" Holmes pauses and says, "Watson, you idiot, someone stole our tent." You see, it often happens that we can get caught up in so many things that we miss the real meaning of things. We miss what is right there for us, but in the mystery that surrounds everything, we miss the point. I'm one of those that when I go to a movie and it's a mystery or there's something going on you need to figure out, I always figure it out a long time before the movie's over, and it really drives my wife crazy. She stopped asking me if I know who the murderer is or who the thief is. And in fact, we went and saw this movie years ago, The Sixth Sense. And everybody told me, "Oh, you'll never be able to figure it out." And about halfway through the movie, I looked at her and I said, "He's dead. I mean, he's just dead. It's obvious." And so I'm usually able to figure those out. And there's one TV show that just kind of twists me around, though, and it's the way they approach it. The TV show is Cold Case. Have you ever seen it? They go backwards. Thank you. Somebody has. They go backwards, and they will go to people, but then they'll go to the person one time and then maybe again. And every time you're going back and forth, they don't really give you enough information. And in fact, in every flashback, it seems as if they show that person committing the crime. So I have trouble figuring that one out. And I want to tell you that these stories that we have in the scriptures in this Lenten series from John also have a lot of twists and turns. There are a lot of characters. They take us in a lot of different directions. I don't know if you've realized it, but these are long scriptures for us to read on Sunday morning. In fact, they're so long, that's why we're doing the little reader's theater, because if one person stood up there and read that, you'd probably fall asleep by the time the scripture was done. So we're breaking them up for you because the stories are so long and important. And in fact, if you'll compare these to stories from other Gospels, from Matthew or Mark or Luke, I think what you'll often discover is in the same length of time, Mark could tell you about 3 miracles and 2 parables in that same length of time because he is short and is to the point. And so why does John take so long? Do you wonder why John is so critical about details and the ins and outs? I think there's a really important reason. John's gospel was written about 60 plus years after the death of Jesus on the cross, after the resurrection. His gospel was written long after the other gospels. And so I believe for a long time they'd told these stories over and over again. John probably sat around with people that wanted to hear the stories of the faith and the stories of Jesus, and he told these stories. And knowing when you're telling a story, just like the silly story about Watson and Holmes, it's the details of the story that bring people in and keep their attention. So I think John wanted people to know every detail of the story. And so we have these great stories, and we started off this series with Jesus talking with Satan and all the details of that story. And last week I spoke to you about the Samaritan woman at the well, and you remember in that story how it was so detailed and so rich, and we learned so much, and it twisted and turned with the disciples and with the woman and with the woman's husbands that she'd had and with the people in the village. And today we have another wonderful text that takes the same kind of twists and turns and takes us in so many different directions. In some ways, it's such a simple story, isn't it? It's a story that begins with this. As he went along, he saw a man blind from birth. And then the disciples said, "Oh, Rabbi, teacher," they said, "who sinned, this man or his parents?" Pretty seemingly simple question, and one that we kind of think silly today, don't we? I mean, we know so much about things that we don't have to think that this man or his parents sinned. But you have to understand that for the people of the day and time of Jesus, if someone had that kind of ailment or infirmity, if there was something wrong with them, everything like that was tied to sin. And so they had to know. They said, "Oh, geez, somebody had to sin for this man to not be able to see." And so they asked this question, and Jesus then replied, "Nah, wasn't either one of them. And in fact, I'm going to use his blindness to teach you about how wonderful God is." The next piece of this story then is one of those that's so interesting. We talked about it in Bible study on Thursday, because Jesus does something. He spits into the dirt. Then he reaches down in the spit and the dirt and makes paste and puts it on the eyes of the man that's blind. I want to tell you something. That was just as disgusting then as it is now. To take your spit and put on someone else. I mean, that wasn't a pleasant thing. And so you wonder why we had to go through all that. He does it. He puts it on. The man has to go and wash. Well, I think in so many ways, Jesus was giving us and teaching us through what we in the church call a liturgy, maybe the first one ever for our church. Liturgy is a word that we use in the church, and I don't like to throw around church words very often, but it's one that means things that we do, and we do them over, and they demonstrate something. Sometimes they're words. Some churches every Sunday pray the Lord's Prayer. That becomes liturgy, because you can count on it. It's familiar. It's going to be there every week. You know it's going to be said. We do things like baptism. When someone's baptized, that's liturgy. We're seeing faith come into action, and they come together in that act of baptism. We have communion, same kind of thing. I think Jesus was using an act to demonstrate so people could see the action of God for themselves physically. Because sometimes it can be hard to see the action of God. And so Jesus is doing this, and he slows everything down in the midst of the busyness. I'm going to slow everything down. And instead of just looking at him, and like I am Mark, and saying, "Mark, you're no longer blind," Jesus chooses a liturgical stage. I told you last week that Jesus isn't beyond doing the theatrical from time to time. I think it's one of those spots where Jesus creates a grand theater of God and shows people through this little mini play about the power of God and the action of God. And then what happens next? The man, he can see. Isn't that great? And then he runs, and I'm sure he wants to tell everybody he knows. And then what happens with his neighbors, his friends, his relatives? They're not sure they believe him. Is this really the same guy? That's what they say. I don't think this is the same guy. They don't want to believe the miracle. Or then they say, it's things like, well, maybe he really wasn't blind, maybe he just couldn't see well, and now he can see better. And so they're trying to explain it away, and it's no wonder we still do that today. And I pulled up a couple articles I want to share with you this morning off Yahoo News. This is off the Yahoo News page. And the first one is one of the reasons I think we question things like this. This is dated last Saturday, the 18th of February, and the headline is, "False Blind Man Caught Out During Car Check." A 70-year-old Italian man who had been pretending to be blind for 40 years to get an invalid's pension was arrested as he drove his car. The police said when they stopped him, he seemed particularly nervous. I can imagine. especially if you hadn't had a license. And so they arrested him. They found out he'd been claiming these false benefits for 40 years. You understand why neighbors doubt these things? You ever walk through the checkout line at Walmart? You see those newspapers, you know, about the, you know, they have things like, you know, a child was born, you know, half dog and those things. You know what I'm talking about? And some alien landed and talked to people at a trailer park. That's the kind of stuff. And, you know, and they have these kind of stories. Well, I've got one off Yahoo News. This is not out of the Star. This is out of Yahoo News. Headline. And this is really a good headline. Blind Irishman sees with the aid of son's tooth in his eye. Talks about an Irishman named Bob McNichol who had been blinded in an accident. And after doctors in Ireland said they could do no more, McNichol heard about a miracle operation in England called, and forgive me for the pronunciation, especially my medical people right here, osteoodontokeratoprosthesis. That's really the words. And it was being performed in England by a guy named Dr. Liu. And he went, and Dr. Liu took McNichol's son's tooth, root, and part of his jaw. He rebuilt it, and it inserted a lens into a hole drilled in the tooth and put it in McNichol's eye. And the article says McNichol can now see to watch television and to see things he hadn't seen since the accident. Take it however you want. You understand why the neighbors didn't believe? Isn't it hard to struggle with these kind of miracle stories? And so they didn't. And so the man then in the scripture goes to the Pharisees. Who were Pharisees? They're the religious authorities of the day. Jesus, in fact, at times didn't really condemn the Pharisees. He would say that at times they seemed to be after the right things and trying to do things right. And they were getting it wrong, but they were trying. At other times he was a little harsher on them. But that's who the Pharisees were. And the man goes and they have this discussion and they say, geez, you know, were you really born blind? And he said, yes. And, well, who is this guy that healed you? And then they start doubting because Jesus did it on the Sabbath. And that was against the rules. And you know, we religious people, we're big on rules. And we like rules, and there's only a certain way things could be done. And so they wanted to doubt. And so they kicked him out and called his parents in. And his parents, they said, now, was he really blind? I mean, they're still going back to that. They don't believe the story. Was he really blind? And they said, yes. And they said, well, then why could he see now? And the parents, being a little frightened, say, you better talk to him. We didn't have anything to do with that. So we just know he was born blind. And so he goes back to the Pharisees again. They talk to him again, and it's this conversation. And you know, when he's talking to the Pharisees, by the way, in these two conversations, there's this great thing he does where he says, you know, I don't know if Jesus is good or bad or a man of God or not. I just know I was blind and now I see. I mean, isn't that a great line? And he said, that's all I know. So if you want him to be a bad person, he can be. I just know that I can see. And then at the end of this whole text, Jesus says to the Pharisees, you may be, you know, they ask him, do you think we're blind? And he said, well, if you claim to be blind, you can see. But if you see, and in saying see here, Jesus was talking about if you think you know everything, if you think you've got it all figured out, if you think you know who God is, and you've got all the right things going on, then you're blind. Isn't that wonderful? It's just a wonderful, power-packed text, much like a cold case, where you've got all these characters in and out of the story, and they're all significant, and they've all got an important part to play in what we're doing. And so as we look at this, then, we say, well, what can we learn out? What a great story, but what's here for us today? I mean, right now, 2008, what is there here for us today? I think there's some things to learn, and one is it's about having blind spots. Or maybe blindness of our own. You know what blind spots are, don't you? That's when you ever try to back up a big car in a parking lot and you can't see, there's something, a post in your way. That's a blind spot. You can't see what's going on. And we all have this blindness. In this story, the disciples were blinded by their willingness to judge. They were blinded because they were judging the blind man and didn't know anything really about him at all. And they judged that he must have sinned or his parents sinned. Do you ever do judging like that? Do you ever look at somebody and you make a snap judgment and a snap decision, and you look at him and you say, geez, I don't know about that guy, or I don't know about her. See, that's one of the things we can learn, that judgments that blind us are not a good thing, that we need to be more open. The second piece is there are other blind spots, and in this story, the neighbors were blinded by their past history. You ever been blinded by a past history? I mean, you know somebody so well, and you don't give them a chance to change, and you know what they did years ago, or last week, or whenever it was. You keep a record of people that have wronged you for years. Maybe you pin it on your refrigerator. That's what those refrigerator magnets are for, I think. You know, oh yeah, these are the people I got to get even with. You see, we do that, don't we? I got to tell you, a lot of you know, some of you don't know a lot about my past. I wasn't raised in the church. And I like to just say, when I was a teenager, I was just kind of rough around the edges. That's a nice phrase, isn't it? I kind of like that. I was rough around the edges, and I would often do it in high school. I would go to soirees, you know what I mean? Parties, I guess there's another word for it. And often I would go to these parties, and there would be things like liquid refreshment there. And I was never against having liquid refreshment when I was in high school. And so I would go to these parties, and one particular time, all my senior year, I dated a young woman who was a cheerleader at another high school, and so I'd go to her parties. And they were always fun, and we'd go out there, and she and I would share in the liquid refreshment. But there was always this one guy that came, always. And he always came, and he never had any of the refreshments. And in fact, every time we had a party, he'd have to leave to be home by 10 o'clock. And I figured out this was really weird to me, and I never did quite figure that out. And so, I mean, you know, I forgot all about those parties. I forgot all about him. My life changed. I went into ministry, and I became a youth pastor in Logansport. I'd been a youth pastor in Logansport for several months, and one Sunday, I look up, I'm standing up the front of the church, and guess who walks in at the back of the church? This guy and his family. And he looked up at me. See, I don't need to say anymore, do I? But you know what? He wasn't blinded by my history. He knew something had changed my life. And he and I became friends. And we became friends with his family at that time. But you can be blinded by people's history, and we don't give them a chance to change. And it's so important that we do that and give people opportunity to grow. And finally, next, the parents were blinded by their fear. You know, that happens to us a lot. Fear will blind us. The truth is that the parents, the only religious community they had was the Jewish religious community, the one they were in. It's not like today. I mean, if I say something that makes you mad, or if I say, geez, I don't like the way you look, and you can go down the street and go to another church. You can go down 350 South. You can go up 18th Street. You can find 10 other United Methodist churches within 10 miles of here, probably, if you want another United Methodist church. But they had no place else to go. So they were afraid when they were called before the religious authorities of their day. They didn't want to be kicked out. This was where their friends were, their family was, their relationships were. And so they were frightened. Are you ever blinded by your fear? You ever at work or even with extended family, and somebody tells a racist story or a sexist story, and you know you should say something, but you don't because you're afraid how they're going to react? It's easy to be blinded by fear. There's no doubt about it. And finally, the last piece in this text today is the Pharisees were blinded by their religion. That's an important thing to note. Because as we talk about these stories, as we walk through these conversations with Jesus, and we see what there is in there for us, that so often in these stories that we're doing, they're important to point out that we are more connected to the Pharisees than we are to the blind man. We are the religious people of our day, and so we're connected to them. And they are blinded by their religion because they think they figured it all out. They have all the answers, they have rules, they have regulations, they have put God in a nice, neat little box. And it's as if they control God and they know everything about God. Are you ever blinded by thinking your way of looking at God is the only way? Your thoughts about faith are the only thoughts? There are a lot of us that do that. If we don't say the right words, if we don't baptize the right way, if we don't dress the right way, if we don't look the right way, if we don't sing the right songs, all of those things can affect us. And they can blind us if we think that we are right. And so we have these texts that come to us through Lent that are so important. I want to read this for you because I think it's kind of an insight for me. When I was researching this week, I came across a text in Matthew where Jesus does kind of smack the Pharisees upside the head a little bit. And this is from the Message. And this is what Jesus said, when sometimes as religious people, we get a little too full of ourselves. Instead of giving God's law as food and drink, by which everyone can banquet on God, you package it in bundles of rules, loading it down like pack animals. You seem to pleasure when people are staggering under these loads and you wouldn't lift a finger to help. Your life is a perpetual fashion show, embroidered prayer shawls one day and flowery prayers the next. You love to sit at the head table at church dinners, basking in the prominent position. You're hopeless. You're frauds. You go halfway around the world to make a convert, but once you get him, you make him a replica of yourselves. You're hopeless. You keep meticulous accounts of the books, tithing on every nickel and dime you get, but on the meat of God's law, on the meat of God's law, things like love, forgiveness, grace, fairness, and compassion, the absolute basics, you carelessly take it or leave it. Careful bookkeeping is commendable, but the basics are required. Do you have any idea how silly you look writing a life story that's wrong from start to finish, nitpicking over commas and semicolons? So Jesus reminds us that sometimes when we think we have it all together, we have the faith, we understand what's right, we're nitpicking over the wrong things. We're blinded by what we think is right. And so these texts in Lent that we're doing between now and Good Friday, they come together to remind us that Jesus talks, and in all of these, seems to be telling us, just like he did the disciples with the woman at the well, that you've missed the point. There are no outsiders. There is no wrong place to worship. There is no wrong way to worship. And now he follows that up with this text today and reminds us that when we think we've got the corner on rightness, we're probably more blind than we could ever realize. Jesus wants us each year, I believe, during Lent, as we take a look at these really wordy, long, technical, just so power-packed scriptures, to make a course correction in our life. Because I think that's one of the reasons we have this period we call Lent, these 40 days before Easter. It's an opportunity as we look at what Jesus is willing to do for us when he goes to the cross, that we need to make a course correction in our lives, just like they did 2,000 years ago. We need to make a course correction and move back towards God and not think we've got all the right answers, but know we're on this journey of faith together, you and I. And sometimes we make mistakes, and sometimes we don't get it perfectly right, and sometimes we don't have all the answers, though I would like to, and we just go on the journey together. So won't you join us on that journey towards that cross this year? We're going to sing with the band, I Am Free. And that's what God does for us. We're free. We're free to sing and to dance and to clap and to cheer and to do all those things. We're free. We're forgiven. And we're free, even when we've made mistakes, to make a course correction and walk towards the cross again. Why don't you join us on that journey this Lent and give thanks to God that we can do it again.